All right, welcome back to the Language Behavior Podcast. My name is Joshua Stamper, and I have the so busy Charlie Peck with me as she is traveling so much, which is probably a good starting point, Charlie, is you're going to be heading over to the Edge Conference June 3rd, and I'd love for you to share with the audience what you're doing there.
Yes, it's for Spotsylvania. It's a great public school there in Virginia. They are just wonderful. It's a group of leaders who are just trying to make a huge difference in the lives of kids, and they already are, so it's neat to be a part of it. But I'll be there for 2 full days doing 3 sessions, and I just love it. One is a new one for them, especially is ADHD in the classroom. This is such a popular session for me right now. All across like the US, people are asking for that. And then of course, our language and behavior, people are asking for that session. And then SOS for school mental health. So that's a great session that I've been doing for a long time. But I always can vary them. So even if when I've been with a school or a district or an organization for years, I always can vary the title. So I'm just so excited. I can't wait.
Well, talking about new, I'm doing something too that's brand new. I'm prepping for that for full day PD. On a very passionate topic that Charlie and I are working on right now, which is on emotional intelligence. And that's coming up in the beginning of June too. So very excited about that as we're kind of expanding the language of behavior into other areas. So that's very, very exciting.
That's awesome. And you've been doing a lot of work too. You've been doing a lot of keynotes and sharing the work that you're doing with all of these large audiences. Like, it's just exciting to see you do that. Love it.
Oh, thank you. Charlie, the same to you. It's fun that we get to do this work in so many different places. So I want to jump into the topic, and I'm going to throw it to you because this question was actually asked directly to you. So I'm going to cue it up on it as a banner, but go ahead and share the question.
Yeah, it was from a school counselor who is trying to support their students and a lot of adolescents, but I'm also working with college students. Mm-hmm. And this question comes up a lot for them in clinical sessions. So the question was, how can I support a student who keeps returning to unhealthy relationships or friendships? It's a lot, especially because I work with the young adults on the unhealthy relationships part, usually the intimate relationships. It's so important to know that this is an internal message they've been getting throughout their childhood, usually from a caregiver who was critical of them, and it turned into their own critical thought or transferred to another relationship that gave them the same critical message. And so it's so important that breaking this cycle young, like as an adolescent, is a great idea. Like, I'm just so glad that this question came up because there's so much we can do. And a lot of adolescents confuse that intensity of a relationship, which you'll notice when you work with them. They confuse that intensity with connection. And we need to break that cycle to understand that when they're so intensely involved, that usually identifies attachment problems. Often it's like anxious attachment, if you know anything about that. Josh, what is resonating here with you? I know that you have worked with a lot of kids experiencing this. What are your thoughts?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I think it's just kind of laying a map out to them. It's funny that this is the topic at hand because I was thinking about this morning, actually, as far as like the ladder of escalation that we teach on, Charlie, in our cohort model specifically. However, I was thinking about what I used to do with kids in my office is I would draw an escalator and I'd show them kind of the toxic things that were happening to get them to an escalated state in the school building. And typically the top of that would be the behavior that resulted in them coming to my office. And what was funny was that a lot of it was these unhealthy relationships, right? It was someone that they were close with, best friends. And it was something that they got triggered. And then it was an escalating behavior to another escalated behavior. And they just got a little bit more of an edge to the behavior or the words that they were saying. And then sometimes it would be as big as a fight in the cafeteria. And you're wondering, okay, where was that point? But laying it out to them on the board was not just the escalation piece that, okay, this is what got you into my office, but also here's a track record of all the things that have happened when you are with this person. Because typically, by the time you're sitting in November, December, January, you might have a long list of things that have occurred. And the thing that's repeating is who they are with and letting them know the influences that are around them. And I used to say, you know, show me your 5 closest friends and I'll show you your future. And I keep saying that with them constantly because I wanted them to understand that the choices that are being made with the people that are around them, especially to your point as an adolescent, the parent component is getting pushed aside. And now the influence is your friends, girlfriends, or boyfriends. And so those folks that are influencing you are going to determine if you're going to be successful in life, and trying to like hammer that home. But I think a lot of them need that visual understanding of a timeline. Otherwise, to them, it's just like a one-off, and they don't see that it's something that's happening often.
Yeah, I love that, because when they have that visual, I think it gives them more like an element of control. And that's what they often feel like. Any kind of anxiousness is a loss of control. Like, oh my gosh, I don't know what's going to happen. So I'm so fearful, or I'm nervous that it's not going to turn out the way that makes me feel okay and comfortable or safe. And so that's what this is about. So, okay, here's what it looks like. There's a lot of conflict, but there's an inability to disconnect with that person or that group of people when there is so much conflict. They have a hard time still leaving that. It does go back to the kind of the tribal need of the human to belong to any group. So they'll belong anywhere. If you get a kid who doesn't belong somewhere, they'll go anywhere. Okay. So they misunderstand that for connection, but it is an internal need, as we all know. They get obsessive over texts or rumors that might be circulating about them, or that they are perpetuating themselves as a part of that network, right? They obsess over those peer approvals. This is what that anxious attachment looks like. They have emotional meltdowns after they feel like they're rejected, and they're not always rejected. They just seem like they think they are, or they're perceiving rejection. And this is crucial. A lot of people who grow up to be narcissists or narcissistic personality types or tendencies, they have a lot of rejection, and they're actually so insecure. That's what that ends up being. And I'm not saying we cannot diagnose narcissism in kids. It's just, they're way too young. But these things need to be addressed so that they can have healthy attachments and confidence within themselves, because they are going to face criticism as they grow up. You can tell I work with this a lot, right? There's a lot going on. So what else do you see? Like, how have you seen this show up?
I was going to say that I agree with the point that you made about not knowing how to disconnect. Because once you lay it out and you show them the evidence, a lot of times the students would have a conclusion of, okay, I see that this is not going well. I understand that I've gotten a lot of consequences. I've gotten in a lot of trouble. Or I've got that gut feeling like I shouldn't be doing these things. I don't like the person I am with this friend. And so how do I get away from them? And so I'm wondering, Charlie, when you have clients or students that you're working with that are having this feeling of, I don't even know how to disconnect, what are some steps that you provide them?
Well, I always say, like, don't say, get rid of that friend. You can't do that. It's not going to work. And then they don't trust to talk to you. So say something like, I can tell this relationship feels really important to you right now, because they've already increased shame and there's that panic in the nervous system. So you don't want to be the adult telling them they can't have the relationship. That is something that they need to understand themselves, depending on the situation. If it's really unhealthy, I mean, we do have to step in and protect these kids. So it depends on the situation. But what we want to do is lower their defensiveness and increase their regulation. So we need to teach them to track patterns. So that's why I love you that you said that before. And I have another thing. I just used it in session. I really want to like pick it up and hold it in the screen, but I can't because there's my client notes on there. So I can't do that. That would break confidentiality.
Yeah, don't do that.
Nope, I will not. But I start with this. And this is something we do in cognitive behavioral therapy. But you notice the pattern. So there's the trigger, and then there's the emotion as a result of the trigger. Then there's the response to that emotion, usually the behavior, the action, and then the consequence of that. And we can track all the different triggers for kids or adults who go through these problems. And what's great about it is we can say, okay, what can you control? Where can you break that pattern? So we're giving them an element of control, and that anxious attachment actually gives them that more feeling of control. Oh, I can actually change the outcome here. I'm not a victim. So it's helpful. So I do love that tangible tool that we can use, and also the way we talk with them. What else would you suggest?
Well, just the fact of control is such a huge piece, because I think that plays into the anxiety that the student may have. And social media only enhances this, but you know, these folks are talking about me, or they're going to do something against me, and having that fear, which then causes the stress, the anxiety. And then a lot of times, you know, they're not even there at school. They're so stressed out, and they're only thinking about the social aspect of things that it really usurps their brain. And there's not a whole lot of learning going on. So if you can identify that, talk through them, with the brain, teach them about their body and what's going on. I think that's always helpful. But then also, to your point, like a lot of times they don't have the language to even talk through this with their friends. So to role play, to model, to give them sentence stems to start with, as far as having the conversation. And to your point, not to break the relationship, but you can talk through boundaries. You can talk about, you know, the fact that they don't need to spend every single moment of the day with them. You know, there's ways to tailor it so that's going to be healthy for both parties. And what does that look like? And then also to the people in their life that are healthy, who do they enjoy spending time with that are actually improving their life? Talking about the control piece, you have control to spend more time with other people that are going to be speaking better into your life or doing things that you both enjoy. That's not going to be toxic. And so giving them the permission to step away from one person and then providing some examples of who they could be spending more time with. And for an adolescent, you don't have a lot of control, right? You don't have a control of where you live. I mean, you don't have control that your neighbor is the person that keeps coming over that wants to hang out with you every single day, who isn't the best person to hang around with. So I think just allowing them to understand that there are things that they can do and talk about circle control, that exists in their life.
Yeah, that's really good that you said that. It's important. And that anxious attachment drives urgency. Like, I need to fix this right now. And that's what we need to do for kids, especially to slow things down. Adults too. Slow things down. That urgency lies to us. That urgency tells us we have to fix this now. So it increases our anxiety. And then we can't concentrate. And then it's just such a spiral, that story spiral we talk about too. So pausing and being grounded, all of those things. But I like that you said earlier that word evidence. Part of the work that we do is ask for evidence. And if we can slow them down so that they can have clarity, get their, you know, their thinking brain back online, or even over time have them track how they feel in the interactions that trigger them, or just, people don't like that word trigger either, just those feelings that they have when they're with that person or that group of people, track it over a week and then talk to me next week. And let's just see, how did you actually feel? And this provides evidence that, you know, this may not be a really healthy relationship, but the best thing we can do is have them come up with it on their own. That's the best and hardest thing to do as well. So that is, I wrote that down after you said it. What we also do in turn is we help them fight that need for impulsivity, or that part of their brain that is impulsive at their age. We help foster settling that down, slowing that down. And impulsivity and reactivity is so rampant in our systems, any systems when we're working with kids in our work environments. So we can help them with impulsivity and reactivity this way too.
Awesome. Well, I think that's a great way to pivot over to our next segment, which is Behind the Banter, where I always like getting Charlie to be on skates and stumble into an answer. All right, you don't have to be too stressed, Charlie, because I'm going to give you a layup here. So we had talked about at the beginning of the show, keynoting or giving PD. And I'm wondering, would you rather do a keynote or a full day presentation with no slides or no microphone?
No microphone, because people need a visual. I want to reach more learners. What about you?
Yeah. I really hate not having a mic, but I also understand what you're talking about. So an example, VibeEDU, which is happening July 31st and August 1st, which we'll probably talk about later in a future episode when we get a little bit closer. But yeah, that one's just a microphone. I don't have any slides for that. And so it's more interactive with the participants. It's not your typical conference. And I really enjoyed that. So I think I'd rather have a microphone. I think I could go without the slides, although I do love my slides.
Well, I love that. And also that just showed my bias. Right. I'm a visual learner, but that doesn't mean everybody else is. And I'm also not being all inclusive that way either. People need the microphone. So I caught myself there too. I just like, it's a good anchor for me personally, but also I like the visual, keeping it simple. So it helps that person. But yeah, I love that. I love that you said that. Good for you. You're really dynamic that way though. You can handle that no problem.
Well, thank you, Charlie. That was a very kind statement. But I was thinking too, as a teacher, technology doesn't always work for us, right? We always had to pivot. And I've done a keynote before where the first 20 minutes I had an IT guy trying to scramble. Actually, in North Carolina, we were sweating it, right? We almost didn't have our slides for that first presentation. So I think sometimes we just have to roll with the punches and do what we do without either a mic or with slides. So
yeah. I just use my booming teacher voice when I need to.
I know. I'm starting to lose that as we do this more. So
I do not want to be the person saying that, because I think that being a participant before, I'm going to use my teacher voice. I actually don't like listening to that. And I'm trying not to say that to people because it's annoying.
All right. Charlie, do you want to end this conversation with maybe a last note for the topic at hand?
Yes. Help kids and yourself. Name the fact versus the assumption. That's it.
Wow. All right. Well, if you have questions for us, we'd love for you to reach out to us to let us know. We always have a form in the show notes, or if you want to jump into the comment section on YouTube or Spotify, you can definitely put a note in there. Both those platforms allow comments. So that's beautiful. And we'll take those questions for future episodes, as we always do. If you need anything from Charlie or I, of course, our websites are in the show notes, and we have a lot of resources that are free for you in addition to this podcast. So we appreciate you being here this week, and we can't wait to see you once again next week.
Great. See ya.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and a podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. We'll see you on the next episode.